The conservative immigration critic says a conservative government's immigration formula could result in lower numbers.
Alberta Premier Danielle Smith is not considering banning transgenders from using women's change rooms or women's prisons.
In 2024, electric vehicles have been harder to sell than gas-powered cars. Hello, Canada. It's Monday, April 15th, and this is the True North Daily Brief. I'm Lindsay Shepherd.
And I'm Isaac Lamoureux.
We've got you covered with all the news you need to know. Let's discuss the top stories of the day and the True North exclusives you won't hear anywhere else. The Conservative Party's plan to tie immigration numbers to available jobs and homes could result in a lower or higher immigration target, an MP says. Conservative immigration critic Tom Kmetch said a Conservative government wouldn't set an arbitrary number, but rather one that takes into account what the country can sustainably accommodate. This could end up lowering or increasing immigration, he told True North's Andrew Lawton. Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre previously said in an interview that immigration had to be tied to key economic factors, reflecting the labor and housing markets. Kmetch said that under a Conservative government, those calculations wouldn't just involve permanent immigration, but also temporary resident immigration. When asked if the immigration calculation should be restricted to just economic indicators, instead of factoring in things like Canadian values as well, Kmetch said he was wary of introducing new things that are not fixed. According to Kmetch, the immigration debate should be about whether the inputs are correct or not, instead of the number itself, saying, if you want more immigration, build more housing. You can watch Andrew Lawton's full interview with Kmetch at www.tnc.news. Isaac, the Conservatives have been skittish on details when it comes to their plan for immigration. Is this a good indication that they're at least thinking about lowering Canada's immigration levels to fix the mess that Trudeau created?
Yeah, Lindsay, as we know from Andrew Lawton's previous interview with Pierre Poilievre, the Conservatives have been hesitant to give exact data on how they plan to deal with Canada's pressing immigration issue. Of course, they say it's based on calculations, but haven't gone as far as giving specific numbers. Obviously, the Conservatives have been conservative with their immigration plan, perhaps worried that going too far in any direction will lose them more than they'll gain. I think that Trudeau, even admitting recently that immigration has gotten out of control, is an opportunity for the Conservatives to pounce, however. True North's Candace Malcolm recently covered that Canada allowed approximately 2.2 million newcomers last year. Of those, Canada saw 660,000 temporary foreign workers, 900,000 international students, and almost 144,000 illegal immigrants. I think the Conservatives recognizing that temporary immigration is also an issue is a step in the right direction. The amount of international students has already began to be addressed, so I'm interested to see what happens in that regard. My biggest question for the Conservatives is, let's imagine that they have a formula for future immigration policies to be successful. How do you think they might address catching up on the over-immigration we've seen in the recent years?
Honestly, when I hear Kmetch say something like, if you want more immigration, build more housing, it makes me think that the party is missing the mark. But I think we can also understand, as voters and citizens, at least the way I talk about it with those close to me is, you know, the Conservative Party in Canada, yes, they won't introduce things like the Online News Act or the Online Harms Act. So if they were in government, we wouldn't have to worry about things like that happening, and that's good. However, the Conservative Party of Canada is not the party that's committing to lowering immigration. And so I think it's just a good starting point to understand that. I wish we had the Conservative Party just outright promising to lower immigration. That would be ideal for me, but I think it's good to, as a starting point, understand that they're not doing that, but they are right on other things. Like, we can trust that they would never introduce something like the Online Harms Act.
Alberta Premier Danielle Smith said she won't be implementing a policy on transgender use of change rooms and whether trans women should be admitted into women's prisons during discussion with True North's Andrew Lawton at the Canada Strong and Free Network Conference. Smith said that she's been consulting with transgender individuals since the moment she entered politics and as recently as Thursday Some transgender individuals traveled to a conference and offered their advice to her on her province's policies. While recently speaking with a transgender individual yet to transition below the waist, Smith learned that the person enjoys spa days with their friends and expressed concerns about being in a separate locker room, which the trans person felt would worsen their experience. She said that she has been keeping a close eye on what's happening internationally and nationwide with issues arising with transgender individuals using change rooms. She had been doing the same for transgender individuals who are imprisoned. However, the premier still stands by the policies she introduced on the issue earlier this year. Smith reiterated her previous claims of following international evidence and science, citing the recently released CAS review, which Smith claimed was, quote, the most comprehensive review of the medical literature and the science behind this. Lindsay, do you believe that the premier should introduce legislation to protect female spaces?
Well, I'll start with something positive about Smith, and that's how she quoted the CAS review. It's good that we have a leader in Canada who's aware of that kind of international research going on. However, you know, when Smith is recounting this anecdote about meeting with a trans person who goes to the spa with friends and doesn't want to be in a separate locker room and wants to be in a female locker room because that person feels their experience would be worsened. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to prioritize that person, that biological male feeling sad that they can't go in a female change room, when my concern is really women feeling vulnerable in their own spaces and women and children. I don't really care about the feelings of the biological male who wishes he could go into a female change room. And when Smith says the issue is modesty and someone who fully transitioned shouldn't be exposing themselves in female-only spaces and no one should know and you should just be behind a washroom stall. Well, actually, the issue isn't really modesty. Because first of all, if there's a biological male who's presenting as a woman and he goes in a female change room and is exposing his genitalia, I mean, that's sick in the head. That person needs to go to some sort of facility. And the issue's not modesty because, as let's say I was entering a female change room, and let's say I'm even with my daughter. Well, if I see a man trying to enter that change room as well, it's just we can't let that happen. Smith also said she hasn't seen anything in Alberta that leads her to believe that she needs to implement a policy that would make women-only spaces just that, for biological women only. However, when we're talking about the jail system and, you know, potential abuse that could happen when men who present as women are in female jails, I think we need to remember that stories of what's happening in jail are probably not getting out publicly for many reasons. Women who have been imprisoned probably feel quite downtrodden and like no one's listening to them. Maybe there were officers or peers who overlooked the experience or downplayed it if it did happen. That's why voices like Heather Mason's are so important. Heather Mason is a Canadian women's advocate who speaks specifically about prisons because she used to be in one. And it's from Heather Mason where I first heard, for example, about Adam Labuchon. He's a man who is known as Canada's youngest offender. He quote unquote transitioned into a woman. And even though he has a criminal history of killing and brutally sexually assaulting babies and children, he was placed in the mother and baby unit of a jail. So he was around babies and children. So I just hope that when Smith said she hasn't seen anything in Alberta that leads her to believe we need a policy, that she's also considering, and we're all kind of also considering, that women, imprisoned women, it's probably harder for their voices to get out there. Electric vehicles were flying off the lots of dealerships at a rate nearly twice as quick as traditional gasoline-powered cars last year. That's not the case anymore, according to the global analysts at JD Power. Today, it takes 55 days to sell an electric vehicle, nearly twice as long as the 22 days reported last year, they found. Gas-powered cars take 51 days to get off the lot on average. The shift could be due to the slowdown of early adopters. The number of customers who are EV fanatics is drying up, and interest in the technology is plateauing. Not all EV types are facing a slowdown, however, as wealthier people are buying luxury electric cars at a rate that's doubling each year. Consumer Reports Senior Director Jake Fisher said, quote, most electric cars today are being manufactured by either legacy automakers that are new to EV technology, or by companies like Rivian that are new to making cars. Ford Motor Company recently announced a 2-year delay in the commencement of electric vehicle production at its new Oakville, Ontario plant, now set for 2027 instead of the initially proposed timeline. Despite a $590 million subsidy partnership from federal and provincial governments, the overhaul of the Oakville assembly plant into an electric vehicle and battery assembly operation is anticipated to take longer than initially anticipated and will result in layoffs. Do you envision yourself driving an EV, Isaac?
No, Lindsay, I do not. First and foremost, and I think most Canadians would agree, the average price tag of an EV is $73,000, according to Canadian Black Book. I don't know about you, Lindsay, but I don't envision myself ever being able to spend $73,000 on a vehicle. On top of that, as I've previously reported at True North, EVs have 79% more problems than gas vehicles. The batteries are a nightmare, especially in cold conditions, and replacing them will cost you a pretty penny. I remember seeing that article recently of the man who had to pay $60,000 to replace the battery on his EV. Also, an electric vehicle's battery capacity can be cut up to 41% in only -6.7 degrees Celsius. Well, I live in Edmonton, one of the world's coldest places at times, where it can get up to -50 degrees Celsius, and I can't imagine having an EV during that kind of weather and it functioning with any sort of reliability. On top of that, our listeners know very well that Alberta has already had immense issues with the reliability of its power grid. And if everyone was driving electric cars, it would not be able to keep up. EVs are great in many places of the world, but in my opinion, Canada is not one of them.
How realistic is the federal government's plan to mandate the sale of EVs if nobody's buying them?
Well, Lindsay, I'd go as far as saying that it's not only unrealistic, but frankly impossible. The feds want all vehicles sold by 2035 to be electric. Nobody wants them. Nobody can afford them, and they're not reliable. It's not going to happen. To be fair, I don't envision this federal government being in power by 2035, so they can virtue signal with this goal as much as they want. It will never come into fruition.
That's it for today, folks. Make sure to check in at www.tnc.news throughout the day for all the news you need to know. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to share our work with your friends and neighbors. And if you're able, please consider supporting independent media at donate.tnc.news. Bye for now.